listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Apex and Westwave Audio. Now from the Nowcast Network studios, here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez, and before we get going, let me introduce the guys. Over here on my right, we've got Brandon Burton.
Hello.
Next to him, we've got the one and only Scott Gershon.
Hello, Mike!
And joining us today, we've got Ken Kane.
Hello.
And over here on my left, the one, the only, the rock of the Audio Nowcast, Rob Arbiter.
Thank you. Thank you, Mike. Hello, hello, hello.
Guys, we're missing a lot of people today.
There's
a lot of people are out working.
It was earthquake.
It was the earthquake.
Lots of you.
I was like, oh my God, the stuffed bunny has fallen over.
I know. Bill's working. I know. Everybody, Forrest.
Bobby.
Nice to know
some people are working.
Martin, Andrew, they're all working.
All of us, you know.
Yeah, does that mean we're all out of work?
Bread lines, you know, it's all that.
Well, anyhow, thank you for making it, guys. And today we are joined. We're going to make like bees, and we're going to do a little cross-pollination because our guest today is Ryan Canestro from The Home Recording Show.
Thanks for having me.
All right.
Ryan, welcome to the Audio Nowcast.
All right.
Ryan, really quick, just tell us a little bit about your podcast.
We basically talk about home recording, as the name implies.
Yeah, it's a very aptly named podcast.
Yeah. I was shocked when we were able to get homerecordingshow.com.
Wow.
It's not available. I said, there's our show.
There you go.
That's nice. What we wanted to talk about.
And if you listen to the, I've heard their podcast, it's really cool. They do, there's three guys and they do really almost a tutorial style of podcast.
More or less.
Yeah. That's really has a lot of really good information, a lot of good stuff. Basically everything that we don't do.
And you have guests or it's always the same three?
It's mostly just the three of us. We'll do two segments and then we'll talk about each segment. The show is about a half hour in length. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we'll do reviews on products. Sometimes we'll do interviews. But for the most part, it's just the three of us.
Cool.
Nice.
And are you all people who have home studios and do it for a living or hobbies? Or
yeah. John Tidy, he is out of the East Coast of Canada. He does different recording, home recording, Pro Tools tutorials, and works in a retail store. Jesse, he does more production audio, post-production, commercials, things like that. Mm-hmm. And then I have a recording studio here in Southern California and do all kinds of stuff, live sound, field audio, just everything.
So you guys aren't physically together when you do the
No,
podcast?
We do it via Skype. A lot of people don't know that we've never physically met, ever.
Wow.
Not like you guys. I can see all of you.
Well, that's because we haven't figured out Skype yet. The second we do, we're all going to be going home.
These are just inflatable versions of ourselves.
Everyone's going to be at home in their underwear.
That's right. Oh, please.
We've tried that. It didn't work out.
How do you do multi-person Skype, or is it audio only?
Audio only.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So we don't like to look at each other.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for joining us, Ryan.
Well, thanks for having me.
And, promote a little goodwill and join up with all the other guys out there that are just trying to make a buck doing audio. So I would encourage everybody to check out Ryan's podcast. So it's really cool. It's at why don't you give away your
homerecordingshow.com.
There you go. All right, guys, we're going to move on. We're going to cover a few things. One of the things we're going to be talking about today, by the way, if this is your first time listening to the Audio Nowcast. The Audio Nowcast is a podcast where we talk about all things audio. We talk about sound design. We talk about the industry. We talk about musical instruments and techniques and tips. And today we're going to talk about a little bit about news. And on the second half, we're going to talk about being in a band, joining a band, the pitfalls of the band, just the whole band culture altogether. But first, before we start that, I don't know if you guys got the letter from Digi. I can honestly tell you this is going to be the last time we're going to talk about Digi Design.
Because they're changing their name.
That's right. But did any of you guys receive that letter, the open letter?
Oh, yeah. I got it.
Yeah. And, it's everything we talked about before.
It's like
about
Star Wars, you know, you got DigiDesign as the Rebels.
Yeah.
And then Avid as the giant Imperial.
I still understand why they have to get rid of the, you know, popular company, DigiDesign.
And they're keeping
AM
Audio.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Well, for now.
But the one thing that I wanted to ask you, and the whole purpose for talking about this one last time, is one of the reasons why they are talking about it in the letter is because they wanted to bring all their different product lines into one website. And you know, thinking that it was confusing to have multiple websites for all the different products. And I was saying, you know, that's ridiculous, because when you want to go to a DigiDesign, you know, something having to do with DigiDesign, you'd know to go to DigiDesign. If you wanted to do something to go to M-Audio, you go to M-Audio. You know, if you had one of the Avid products circa 1989, and you would go to, you know, the Avid.
Yeah, who was actually that confused?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
You know what, though? And I can finally talk about this, because this is actually something that has been known for months, but
right.
thanks to some really incredible non-disclosure agreements, you know, we couldn't really talk about.
Right.
But I've known this was coming for a long time, and I've been in on some discussions at Avid and at Digi about, you know, all of this rebranding. And it actually really does make a lot of sense. I mean, I agree, we're all familiar. We, as the geeks, are familiar with the name DigiDesign, but
right.
But Pro Tools is really the brand that most people know.
I will give you that one.
And because of the way the economy is and the industry is, and because they've acquired so many companies, it really does make sense to try. It's a pain now, but to consolidate all the brands under one roof and only have to deal with marketing and promoting, you know, one web presence. And there are still going to be brands for a while, like the M-Audio brand of stuff. And, you know, there'll still be Pro Tools brand and stuff like that. But it really, in the long run, is going to make a lot of sense for them to have the stuff consolidated. And you're not going to find too many people who thought the Digi website was awesome. I mean, there are lots of people who learn their way around it
right.
by having to struggle and find it.
But we have a company with a lot of brand names.
Right.
And so we're in that similar situation. But Avid could have easily updated Digi's website to do whatever they needed it to do.
Well, and that's sort of what is happening. But to maintain that many different independent brands, I mean, your company has a bunch of different brands, but they right. don't have hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people constantly pounding on them for tech support and general public, which is often a bunch of people who don't know what they're doing. It's a lot. They spend a fortune maintaining this stuff. And I can just honestly say, without going into, you know, all the details that I don't even understand all of them, but the people at the top at Avid, you know, it's different people than when we all started talking about Avid a few years ago. And they're really, really smart, and they really understand their brand, and they understand the product line. And it's, you know, change is always a little bit frustrating and difficult, but I honestly have to say, I really think they know what they're doing.
Well,
the inside.
I mean, I hope they know what they're doing. Because,
no, they do. They do.
Because all I can imagine is going to a single place and then having to wade through the pro stuff versus the consumer stuff.
No, but you know what? The way the new web stuff is laid out, it's so much more logical and so much better.
And
even if you were used to the Digi site the way it was.
But my question is getting to what Scott said, it's like they could have just did that to the Digi. I mean, I guess.
Well, what brand were they going to stay with? Well, no, just Digi?
But all it is a shingle. I mean, the management, the infrastructure, it could all be housed in one building. Nobody, I mean, it doesn't need to be, we think of it as separate companies. But like our company, most people don't even know our true name.
Right.
Of, you know, our business name.
It's Ted, right?
It's Ted. Yeah,
okay.
Right. Oh, it's out. So, all of the different brand names, which they're branding anyway, could be housed, maintained, IT, everything by the same people.
But it's a lot more complicated to be maintaining multiple brands if there's no real upside for it. I mean, 2 or 3 years down the road,
name
this is all going to be a memory.
It's all name.
But they're not
losing
Pro Tools, which is the main name
that
people recognize.
And that I will give you. Most people say, do you have Pro Tools? Do you work on Pro? What do you work on? Do you work on Pro Tools?
Pro Tools.
Yeah.
See.
But you have to understand something. These people, these Avid people, they don't do anything without doing a massive amount of research. They're really, really, really smart.
And I could tell that because by what Final Cut's really done to them on the Avid side.
But you know what?
Ooh.
You know what, though?
Not so smart.
But that didn't happen. That didn't happen under the watch of the current people
okay.
at Avid.
Score one for Rob.
Well, no, it's just true. Yeah, It's not scoring a point. These people who've come in now are having to do some cleanup and some mop up, and they understand exactly where they stand in the industry. They understand what Final Cut is. And
at the end of the day, it'll be right or wrong.
Wait,
I mean,
yeah. Were they responsible for that hideous logo? If you can say yes to that one,
the triangles,
then we're doomed. But
no,
if
no,
you say
I,
no, then,
no, the logo's okay.
No, the logo's hideous. The logo's hideous. Seriously,
it
gives me a stomachache just looking at it.
We'll get you some Maalox and move on.
on the flip side, though, doing post production, I'm excited because now finally, maybe Avid and Pro Tools
right.
will be able to truly work together yeah. in a more seamless way.
Believe me, they understand the need to do that.
Yeah.
Okay. There's no question whatsoever.
Do they understand the need to bring their prices in line with reality?
I'm done talking.
Because, by the way, Rob is now working for...
No.
The
answer I'm still
is
just
a
little
I,
old
I understand. You know what? It's going to be...
But you know what? The LE, though, is cheap.
I understand
it's inexpensive. The little M... Not the M-Box. What is that? Mini?
Little dongle?
Yeah,
the M-Box Mini.
Yeah. $100-some-odd.
Micro.
If the stuff is selling like crazy, you know, it can't be priced that horribly.
What we just need is Nuendo and Logic to keep doing what they're doing because they keep driving Digi to those places.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah.
Competition.
Yep. Yeah. Competition never hurts. Well, you know what? We, you know, really the whole, I guess, argument in the long run is kind of mute because they're going to do what they're going to do and we're going to sit here and see what's going to happen.
Is it really going to affect your life that much if they change their name or not?
No.
Does anyone walk around saying, I use DigiDesign, that's going to be upset?
But you know what people do say? DigiDesign's a tongue twister anyways.
What people do say, though.
My tattoo just doesn't make sense.
There we go. You know, what people do say is, I need to invest in some technology, and if they're buying a big HD rig and they're going to spend dozens of thousands of dollars, what they care about is that the company is going to be there in a few years to support them. So no one cares about the name, but they do care that they're not buying something that's going to be a dinosaur. Yeah. When I bought the D-Control, I bought it figuring this product has to have a life of a few years. You know, I figured 5 actually would be nice, and it's been 3, and it's still, you know, a spaceship. People still love it. But, you know, you got to figure – when you buy any piece of gear, if you're buying something expensive, you figure how long this is going to be the cool thing to have, and you weigh it against how much it costs. And people are just going to want to know that whether it's called Avid or Digi or Pro Tools or whatever, that it's going to be there, that there are going to be software upgrades, that there are going to be support if something goes wrong. And I think Avid totally gets that.
All right. Well, you know what? We're going to see. And,
and Rob,
I trust you. So I'm going to trust Rob. You know, Rob feels that passionate about it.
I don't know. I'm just saying is all.
I don't back down, man.
Hey, let's put it this way. I'm not regretting all the stuff I bought,
And the reality is there's no major competition.
Right. No, do I. And they've got... You know, I was reading some posts and you go to the websites and you read the blogs and the first thing that, you know, you read is like, you know, DigiDesign is finally, you know, getting theirs and they're going to be gone in 5 years and all this. And that's the reality is no, they're going to own the market for a long time because it works. It works well. It's a great editor. It's a great mixing
environment. I mean, the only person I think that has the potential, and it's not Nuendo anymore, and it's Apple. In other words, if they want to create an audio solution in post, more than Soundtrack Pro.
Yeah.
They have that potential if they wanted to do.
But they don't have how much money they're making selling iPads and iPhones.
They don't care. They're still a devices company.
Yeah, but they. You know what? They don't have the engineering though, and they don't think. I can say that I met with some Apple people that actually came to.
They can buy them.
Right. Yeah.
They can buy Nuendo. They could buy anything and change their name to Avid. Apple.
I sat with some Apple people. I told them this is before the latest version of Soundtrack Pro came by, and they came and you know they sat and they observed me mix in and the work environment and everything. And I told them exactly how we do things in post and where the strengths, the pros and the cons were of Pro Tools and what we needed, and then waited, and then the new version of Soundtrack Pro came out, and nothing was in there, you know? And I'm like, okay, you know, you're going to do it your way, and they've got their market. But I think for the pro market, I think they don't have that mindset.
The last three movies I've done have been Final Cut Pro.
No, I'm not talking about
But they don't have an audio solution for it, and they could easily have one. And my thing is either they invent it or they buy it.
Yeah, but see, they put too much faith in Logic, and they're thinking that Logic.
No, Logic's not.
They know that no one's using Logic for film post.
And Soundtrack Pro is just—it's not even close. It's great for if you're the little guy and you're doing your little home movies and stuff, and it's great. You can kind of get a quick mix. But when you need to do something sophisticated with audio and, you know, sidechaining and things like that, and think of it in a mixed environment, it's just you can't do it. It's not workable that way. But anyway, we'll see. We'll see what happens. It's going to be interesting to see.
Or Google.
Yeah, you have Google.
No, you know what you do?
They got everything else going on.
You end up getting about 12 iPads. You put them together, and that's your virtual console.
Well, you know what? Speaking of iPads, let's change topics really quick. Not yet, but
come on,
but
you're behind it.
I'm pretty tempted, but I don't know if you guys, you know, read anything about the iPad.
I haven't heard of this iPad you speak of. What is this?
It's a feminine hygiene product.
Oh, nice. Nice.
I want one. I want two.
But you know, I went down to the Apple store and I wanted to check it out, the iPad. And I will tell you that there was some, and I spent a good, 20 minutes with it. Mm-hmm. And it was really incredible, just the user experience as far as the interface goes and just how easy it was to get in and out of applications and things like that. And then I went online and you start reading about, Korg releasing, their Electric Tribe program.
It's better than an iPhone where you're sitting there with your one finger trying to control Pro Tools. Right. Like you're saying, look, I got a little synthesizer. Right. It's like a little keyboard. I'm like, it's ridiculous. The thing's like...
But the cool thing that's coming out is there's a lot of controller software that's coming out for it. People are doing some really great things on, with MIDI control and with DMX control and just the control in general. And so I wanted to
Ableton Live controller.
And
absolutely.
Ooh. Well, and I wanted to open up to you guys because it's not only the iPad. You see these applications for your iPhone and for smartphones. Do you ever see in your workflow having a use for a device that you can either an iPad or an iPhone or a smartphone where you want to control your DAW away from being in the sweet spot? I mean, is that something that...
Yeah, if you're like playing drums.
Transport Z,
exactly.
I mean, a lot of us are using the Frontier transport box.
That thing's discontinued, isn't it?
Is it?
I think.
Why?
That's a great little form factor.
It is a nice great box.
The remote control one. Right?
But not only that, I think what's great is the iPad's coming out, but actually I've got an Android by Google.
Right.
And what's interesting is Google is making an operating system that will run on multiple people's hardware.
Right.
So as Apple's gaining definitely traction, Google's coming from the side.
Right.
And now it's not going to be it's not going to be hardware specific. And I'm very impressed with the Google mobile operating system.
No, that's cool. Android's definitely it's a great system.
Because they got the one coming out now.
Yep, it's a great system. Well, the reason why I asked you guys that because as I was playing around with it, I was looking at some of the applications. I could actually see these applications changing the way we work as musicians or editors or even mixers in our environment. It's going to be a slow creep, but it's going to happen because there's going to be a time where, right now everybody sits in the sweet spot and you mix. But when you start, like I do a lot of home theater mixing and things like that, I think there's going to be a time where I'm going to pick up my little iPad. I'm going to walk to where someone would sit down and instead of being in the sweet spot and just kind of making adjustments on my mix based on where I am, which is something that, you never, ever did before. You pretty much mixed to the sweet spot.
Scripts. Actors can read scripts off it. A giant panner.
Well, yeah.
I wasn't joking about getting multiple iPads because flat surfaces, you can have EQ adjusts. You can have panners. I mean, you can have the virtual console that you wanted, and you just put your hand on it, and it's there.
Yeah, and you can do certain moves that you can do with your hand that you couldn't do with knobs or faders.
Right.
There's going to be all kinds of things.
Yeah, it's great for live electronic music as well.
Especially when
it looks cool on stage.
When you're talking about velocity, and you combine that with multi-touch, being able to have parameters change with velocity, as opposed to just straight up and down, where you can.
Does it have velocity?
No, but some of these programmers that are working on some of the
speed of movement, go slow, go fast.
It doesn't actually have the speed that you tap it.
No. But I did see you look at what they're doing over at what's the name of the people that do the lemur?
I saw it.
Mutant jazz
something
mutant,
like that, yeah.
Something or another. They have some pretty cool things where that you can change the velocity of the panner going up and down. So if you go with a quick swipe, it goes quick. If you go with a slow swipe, it goes slow. And then you can do up and like a wave. It's just really interesting the parameters that you can do now that you have all this control that are just a little bit more elegant and a little more fluid than what you could with just a regular fader or panner.
I think that Apple was smart, and I think there's controversy of like it's not really a computer, but I think that Windows would not work well on a pad because you're trying to do two different paradigms within the same piece of hardware.
Well, they tried the tablet. It failed.
Yes. And it's interesting because, like, you see what Apple's done, And we did all the sounds for something from Microsoft called Surface.
Right.
And they have a big industrial version of something very similar to an iPad, but it's the size of a full table.
And it's like $20,000.
You know, yes, but one thing that it does that's fascinating, it has an up camera. So you can actually put, let's say, an iPod or a camera into it. And there's a little bit of a graphic barcode, if you want to call it. Mm-hmm. That's not barcode. You put it down and it automatically says, oh, that's a Canon, blah, 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 blah. Then you just take your hand, you move it off of the camera to an envelope, and it takes all your pictures and downloads it.
That's great. It's like the whole Minority Report thing.
Right, because what happens is it's actually an intelligent screen where it has an up feature that it actually sees what you put on there. If you put a glass that says, it'll actually put like a little wave of liquid. So, but what's interesting is where the technologies are all going.
Yeah, it's more of a prototype of what's going to be consumer
absolutely,
in the next 10 years.
Once you figure out the hardest thing to do, like the DX1 in the old days when people know what that is,
right.
Now all of a sudden you can start making smaller versions of it. That's a whole lot easier. So it's interesting to see where the new touchscreen technology,
yeah.
It's no longer a computer.
The only thing is with Microsoft and the mobile experience, I mean, I'm forced to use a Windows mobile phone still because my security yeah. system is tied to it. It has happened so many times where I'll be on a call and I want to hang up and I go to hit the hang up button, but it can't hang up until I press OK to some dialogue box that's popped up about how it can't find my local area network. And I mean, it's such a Microsoft experience to me. Like, you'd want to dial 911 and it would ask you for a password.
But see, that's where I feel
they
that.
Really don't get the mobile experience.
Well, no, I think they do, but it's a different department because I've been there. I think that's what I'm saying. To do Windows concept on a touchscreen doesn't make sense at all, whether it's phones or anything. What they're doing in Surface, if you ever saw it, looks nothing like Windows. It's a whole separate concept that it's different movements, different hands. It's kind of like Apple on steroids. And you can see them in hotels.
Right, but Surface is a product that most of the world doesn't know about.
Yes,
I'm saying Windows Mobile, there are hundreds of thousands of people who have it, and it's horrible.
Well, the new Windows Mobile 7 is coming out, isn't it? Aren't they calling
I'm
it
sure it is,
else?
And it'll probably have even longer passwords.
But I think they're still digging their ditch from the Vista days. I mean, there was an era of they just came out with crap, day in and day out.
Yeah. But you can only do that for so long.
Well, I will
they
defend
have a lot of money though.
Yes, it's still a giant foothold.
Yeah, and I will defend Windows 7. It's the
Windows 7 is awesome.
The
it's
best
way better.
Experience.
From what I've heard and what I can't even disclose, they messed up, and I think that it's kind of like yes, we're Microsoft. And then all of a sudden they came out with stuff at a time when Bill Gates was leaving and there was all this weird dynamics. And now all of a sudden they said, all right, we're getting our butts kicked between Google and Apple. We got to get back in the game. And they know it. The interesting thing is they've got the funds to buy it. I mean, to.
Right, but their paradigm is big, expensive software. So they either buy a company or they write their own. But, I mean, like, as a developer now that I've been doing that and seeing the Microsoft tools versus the open source tools, I mean, one of the interesting things is Microsoft, I'm involved with some groups dealing with open source software and Linux and PHP programming and all these different things, major geek type stuff. But Microsoft is actually sending out people to join these groups. It's not a secret or anything, but they want to see what's happening in the world of open source because they realize how much it is actually kicking their butt.
Well, open source is where everything's going to go.
Well, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been developing, we talked about it last time, the City Love Music website.
Right.
That's www.citylovemusic.com. That whole website was developed with, if it had been Microsoft tools, it would have been, dozens of thousands of dollars worth of tools. And instead, it was completely open source. And it just works great. I was able to get unbelievable amounts of support as I was learning the technology on the web. The Microsoft tools are good, too.
Right.
But they're not good enough to justify the expense. And hopefully now that Microsoft is out sort of half spying in the open on what open source is doing, maybe they'll learn from it. They obviously have a lot of really smart guys.
But I think what's happening is everybody's looking in front of them and looking at open source, looking at Windows. And all of a sudden, no one's looking behind them, which I've just become a massive fan, and that's Google. I think Google's saying, you know what? You need a spreadsheet? We got one online. Doesn't matter what computer on. You can go to work. You can go to a hotel. You can go home. Cloud computing. We're totally all over.
Yeah, how do you compete with that? They're great tools.
And it's all free.
And Google's competing more with Microsoft than Apple is at this point.
That's true.
And it's all from selling advertising.
And
I mean, that's
you have
why
to
Google
sell your soul to Google. Seriously, I mean, they wanted to know everything about
they've
you.
They've got my email. They've got my voice. They've got my documents.
And,
I mean, they,
and you
if
know
they
what?
Turned evil, they
no,
know everything.
But you know what they're doing, though, that which is interesting. Yes and no, but at the same point, you say, do you really want to know about tampons? You really don't. Because that's not what you're into, I hope. But what you do want to know is about audio. And what happens is, as it looks through your emails and everything else, it is figuring out how to sell to you. And the reality is that, whether it's TV, because you watch TV and half the stuff doesn't apply.
And it's targeted marketing.
Absolutely. Now all of a sudden you go, oh, I wanted to know about that. Oh, that's kind of cool. It's going towards things that interest you. And at one point, as long as it's not abused, that information, it's targeting all things you actually want to know about.
You know what? It'll get abused because it's corporations and men. They're evil, and eventually it's going to bite us all in the butt, but we'll see what happens. No, but, you know,
the
you're
optimist.
Right, Google and definitely is I think Scott's right, though. I think they're going to be the 900-pound gorilla that's going to be
– They have been. They already are.
No, that, but
well,
in software
not,
development –
They're not there yet, but the potential – there's a giant tsunami wave coming at us.
Yeah. Because once you get the Android slates and pads that are going to be coming out, that's going to be awesome.
Having the Android, they've already figured it out.
Yeah.
So now they just got to apply it, but they're smart because they don't want to build hardware. Apple is only going to be Apple on Apple products.
Didn't they build the Nexus, though?
The Google.
The new phone. Google
built
the
Google
Nexus phone.
But the Android's Motorola. In other words, if you're a hardware – this is the Digi against everybody else. Apple, if you want their product, you got to buy their hardware, and that's it.
Yep.
Samsung, Sony, they're all out. Same thing with DigiDesign. You only can use the icon. Harrison, all the other consoles, you're screwed. Now, all of a sudden, Google says, I got a way for you to compete against Apple. Use our operating system, and you use your hardware. Now, all of a sudden, people can outprice. They can compete. The market opens up in a way that you get a very Apple-esque with lots of choices at a high quality.
Oh, absolutely. It's open source. They give it to everybody.
And that won't happen in the audio industry because the pot of gold that you're going after isn't nearly big enough.
But it's mobile technologies.
But it totally makes sense in the mobile community.
Yeah, from what I've read about Google, they're not interested. The operating system, that's Microsoft. They don't want it.
Right.
They don't want to touch it. That's theirs. They want to now become the new Microsoft of mobile technologies.
Well, they're doing the Chrome OS as well.
Right.
Yeah.
So they are kind of getting into it.
It's
open
OS.
Source, and they're not trying to lock it down.
Right.
I think that they're playing with it, but I don't think it's real.
It's more of a tablet thing too. They're not going for a full desktop.
Yeah, Chrome's going to be on their version of iPad. I mean, that's basically where you're going to see Chrome and Android. You know, that's popping up. The only bad thing about open source and the Android is there's a lot of different companies out there, and they all have a different kind of flavor, a different front end to their Android. And that's the one thing they got to figure out. At least when you go to an Apple or when you go to Microsoft, it's a homogenized experience for that particular company. So once Google figures that out, then
but what is great is it creates better competition because Apple, aka the music and everything else, is almost had a monopoly. Everything that everybody hated Microsoft for,
right?
Apple is starting to do because they own entertainment, they own a lot of things, and you got to pay money to the temple of Apple.
Right. And they're the number one music retailer in America now.
Absolutely. So now it gives you options.
Well, the best thing too is that's right, Scott. Is we have options, and for us, for any musicians, or if you have a band out there and you want to start selling your music, you know, it's always good when you have different outlets and you have different people. And different opportunities for people to buy your music and for you to reach out and get some fans. Well, hey, listen, we're going to take a break right now.
What? What?
I know, that flew by, didn't
it? I was just getting started.
And when we come back, we're going to talk about bands, all things bands.
Rubber bands?
Some people. All right, we'll see you on the other side.
Listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Aphex and Westwave Audio. Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the LA area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Audio Nowcast. And before the break, we were talking about all kinds of stuff. But right now we're going to change directions a little bit. And we're going to talk about something that I've wanted to talk about for a long time, and we just haven't had a chance to get to it. And that's, we're going to talk about bands.
Bands.
Being in a band, starting a band, the politics of bands. And first of all, let's just go right around the room and let's just find out. Rob, were you ever in a band?
I was in a band. That's actually how I met Stevie, is I was in a band called Mix that he was going to produce.
Nice.
And he actually teamed us up with a bunch of writers and producers. And over the years, Scott's actually met some of them. Nate Watts, who's Stevie's bass player.
Right.
And Michael Cimbello and all kinds of great people. And it was a great experience. I mean, I was 21 when I met these guys, so that was the right age. But, yeah, when I moved out here originally and first met Stevie, actually I met him on the East Coast, but when I moved out here, it was because I was in a band, and it was a pretty big band. It was sort of like an Earth, Wind, and Fire kind of group.
What was the name?
Mix, M-Y-X, it was spelled.
Like sticks.
Well, you can Google us and you'll find absolutely nothing.
That's awesome. Nothing on YouTube?
Nothing. YouTube. We're talking a 45. Long time ago. We're talking, it was 1985.
There's got to be some video evidence somewhere.
That's awesome.
Oh, I have tons of audio evidence. And it was a great group. And we had a bunch of great singers. It was a good group. And
hairstyles?
In varying degrees. It was musically a really good group, and we had some really good songs. But so, yes, and there were a lot of crazy personalities. I think there were 7 principals in the group. So,
wow.
Yeah, the personalities and all of us in like cramped up in Oakwood apartments and stuff.
That's awesome.
I have definitely been in a band.
Ryan, you ever been in a band?
Yeah, I've been in several. Most notably, I played with the Travis King Band out of Orange County a couple of years back.
Great.
And, all through high school and everything else, always played guitar in bands.
Cool.
Now I'm just playing in the studio mostly on other people's stuff, but it'd be nice to play with some people again and do something that was mine.
That's cool. Ken is in a band now.
Yes, I am in a band. I'm just like him. I've been in bands my whole life since I was 15.
So you guys have a bond.
Yeah.
The name of your band right now, Ken, why don't you?
The name of my current band is called Dreamers.
Nice. Scott, you've been in a band?
I've been in tons, actually. Now I just sit in a room by myself making music. There's a name for that.
The U Band.
I've toured a little bit and been in all different types of bands.
Nice. Brandon.
Yes, same thing. Several bands since I was a kid. The last one, a couple out here, a little rock and roll band and a little electronic band.
Nice.
By the way, Scott, when you sit in a room and make music by yourself, that's called musturbation.
Musturbation.
I was waiting for it.
Yeah, I just wanted to leave people up to imagination.
I knew it was there.
Nice. So that's cool.
Do you realize I was in a glam band?
You were in a glam band?
I was in a glam band, played the Roxy.
Oh, my
gosh. And the troubadour, the whole
band.
Can
we find that
again?
Okay,
I was going
to say, now I need to see some.
So everybody needs to.
So
there
was
like.
Really?
So everybody needs to go for Google Images Scott Gershon and look that up.
The band was called Ruby Slippers.
We got Mix and Ruby Slippers.
Yeah.
Well, that's funny.
Yikes. Let's get the band back together.
I played in a band. It was a Christian rock band called the Deacons. So I guess we were the anti-glam band. But, yeah, it was fun. Well, see, and that's why I wanted to bring it up, because it seems like anybody who's played any type of music, you just feel compelled to want to jam with some friends. And then you guys get together and you jam, and then you're thinking, hey, let's form a band.
That's the wrong approach.
Yeah, it's a great way to end a friendship. You tell you that.
But that's what happens. And you get horror stories, and you get
it's
definitely fun.
Especially when you're younger.
But what I wanted to do.
And you don't need money.
Is I wanted to give people a little insight. And because we have a lot of listeners that are students. We got a lot of listeners that are young, that are just starting out. And let's just go and talk a little bit about the band dynamic and give people some little bits of advice to succeed, because we want these people to succeed and not go through some of the problems. And first of all, really quick, does anybody have a horror story about their band breaking up? I mean, anybody have I mean, almost everybody shakes their head and says,
of course.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, see, and that's the thing. And I think we've all learned from the band experience. So,
but, you know what? One thing I've noticed though is growing up, everybody had a band to quote-unquote make it.
Right.
And we're going to make it, and we're going to get a record.
It's such a Partridge Family kind of idea.
And we're going to get a record deal and make it and be rock stars. And then what I've found over the years, most of the people that I know went pro hate music. Most of the people that I know that never really think they're ever going to make GoPro, but just have a great time, are gigging all the time. They love it. They're doing tons of concerts. And they enjoy the process and the experience. And that's kind of where it is. And then if you start realizing your crowd can't fit in a bar, you get a bigger place. Until you get to a bigger place where you can fit everybody.
So that would be the first thing is when you start a band.
Let's be realistic.
Well, you know
what?
Do
it for the love of the game.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Have fun. That's the first thing. Gang, if you start a band, go in to have some fun. You know?
I mean, the days of the record label, they're going to throw millions of dollars at you.
Gone,
the limo shows up. And
they might throw millions of pennies at you. You know?
Just to hurt you.
Brandon, you were going to say something?
What was I going to say? Yeah. I think I was going to talk about just the whole dynamic of getting together with a band and what's your approach. If you want to just have fun or if you want to make it.
Two very different things.
But you know what? Why can't you have fun as you're trying to make it?
You can.
And that's point number two. I think when you form a band, right off the bat, you gotta talk about things about like what happens when you write a song, you know? I just think that would be kind of something
like
talk about
what kind of things? What do you mean?
Talk about
like money and stuff?
Writing credits?
No. Just writing credits, stuff like that. I mean, just talk about things.
I could stifle the whole like process right there if you start off like that.
Yeah, it's like, hey guys, I just wrote a song. Here's the contract.
Yeah. No, but
you have to work out what the dynamic is between the band and when you write.
I do all the work and nobody else does.
I mean,
why am I sharing it?
Yeah, I'll tell you. I've seen it. You know what?
It ruins it.
Well, there's I see your point of view too, though. Ken,
the chicks dig me more than the drummer. You know,
but then down the road that could be a really cause some big problems. So, I mean, where do we go? I don't know. Is that something you talk about?
You work that stuff out ahead of time. You say, listen, if we're all involved in writing the song, we're splitting it evenly or something like that.
Yeah.
Or just don't have everybody in the room when you're writing the song.
So I think it works two ways.
That does have to be worked out ahead of time.
You can either be a gang, like a gang of four.
That's probably has to be the best way.
Yeah, you came up, you grew up together, you grew up at the same time, you have the same experiences, same music tastes. You're all on the same page.
Right.
You think as one people, like the Beatles or something.
Everyone shows up at every practice. Everyone shows up.
Totally
everyone
committed.
Contributes equally.
Yeah, that
and then
works.
Everyone splits equally.
Otherwise, it needs to be one person who's doing everything, songwriter, controlling everything, and bring in, people to play live with you. Or if you need a drummer, bring him in.
And those are the bands where the drummer is always different every session.
Yeah.
You know, maybe the guitar player hangs out, but it's usually one or two guys that always have rotating musicians.
Well,
or there's a group that is.
But what happens, I think the record companies screw it up because you look at a band like No Doubt.
Yeah.
And they were a band, but they love that lead singer.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, because bands, it's easier to control one person
than to
control multiples. So they can take, that's the person who they really like. I can get a backup band anywhere.
You know what? I was going to say that, too. Every band has some attitude and idea about who the leader is and, who's out in front and who's the main person and who's the front man for the band and who are the backing guys and the sidemen and everything. And the truth is, none of that ends up mattering. The public and in the old days, the labels are just going to fixate on whoever they think is going to help sell the most product. And a lot of bands, I've seen so many bands, especially recently, where there's like a main guy out in front who sucks.
Right.
But the band is actually really good. But if you were to ask everybody, well, whose band is it? Oh, it's that guy who sucks. It's his band.
Yeah.
And the truth is, as an independent label, if I'm looking for bands or even if I'm trying to find music for our library or whatever, we don't care what the band thinks they are. We care what the public and the paying world would think they are. And if we see a great band where everybody's great except the lead singer,
guess who's getting swapped out?
Well, yeah. If we do anything at all. Actually, you know what? Nowadays, I just write them off because it's not worth it.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to get in and ruin anybody's life, but I also realize there's just nothing there as long as that clown's in front.
Well, you know.
Oh, was that a little harsh?
I think the day of the manufactured band, it's kind of gone.
Well, that's
true. It used
to
be, we'll make it. We got the big bucks. We're going to come in. Now it seems like they want a band that's almost big, and then they'll just sell that.
Well, they want to see that you've already had success.
Well, the general public can already sort out what's fake and being fed to them, and what's more organic.
Right.
And, yeah. Well, I think more than ever.
Here's the thing about bands too, though. It's a different ballgame in the fact that there is no they. Because they now, you know, as a band, you can put up your own website and start selling your music directly.
Yeah, you get worldwide distribution from your laptop.
Yeah, there is no label. But I think Brandon brings up a good point. You know, if you're starting off, you need to see if it's even necessary to have a band. Because you could just be a solo act and just bring in musicians
players.
And do your own thing. I mean, you look at some of the stuff like, you know, some of the groups out there that are basically, they're not a band. They're one person who writes and gets a massive production, especially with the production tools we have nowadays where you can play a lot of your own instruments. So I think that's right off the bat.
Because otherwise, you have – it's like a dysfunctional marriage between four people that you're trying to work out.
There's exactly egos, how I describe it.
Egos, all this stuff involved, and it's very complicated.
And let's talk about that. Let's talk about what are some of the things that tears bands apart. Anybody, start naming a few things.
Egos, it's
just
always
being in it for enough time.
But we say egos, but specifically, how do they manifest
themselves? They manifest themselves because everybody on some level thinks they're the most important person in the band, and usually all but one of them are wrong, and that's a problem. And the truth is, if you have a band that has a really strong leader and the other guys are all just there to support that person – you know, those other guys are lucky to be affiliated with someone who's as talented as their leader. There are plenty of bands like that where there's truly one genius, and then the other guys are all good enough
and
to
they
be
get
there.
And
they get, but they get what their role is. But if you have a band where everybody has this ego, like, you know, well, I'm the main guy here, it might – everybody can kind of keep that down for a little while, but it'll end up coming up and destroying the band.
But
no
even if the dynamic's right, sometimes – you know, some of the people, they'll have weird habits or other things that it's just like being around a sibling. Some things just drive you nuts and you just want to kill each other.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It doesn't matter who's the leader and who's, you know, the ego situation's right.
But I think a creative process is not a stagnant process. And that means that, look, when you form a band and you get all these individuals and they start inspiring each other to create music. At some point, after spending so much time together, you know, everybody gets into other things and is inspired by other things, and everyone sometimes doesn't go in the same direction. And I don't think bands, as much as we as a public would like them to stay together forever and ever, the reality is the creative people want to be able to expand in ways that everybody might not be going in the same direction. So they split off. They do solo albums.
Everyone grows in a different way.
Everybody grows in a different way. And I think that,
like, you know, the Chili Peppers have done that really well. They've all gone off and done.
I mean, I was interesting to see, because I like a Genesis, and where how the band, each member, except for the main guy, who's the keyboard player, he tried to do a solo album, didn't work. But Mike and the Mechanics worked. Mike Rutherford, Phil Collins did great.
Right.
Peter Gabriel. They all broke off into ways that inspired them. And the keyboard player wanted to go more classical, but he is really the songwriter for Genesis. That's his baby. He's one of the lead writers for it.
Right.
And, do you think classical was going to be the big thing in the 90s? I'm just making jokes.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know, you brought up a really good point as far as, you know, when you start a band, I think the point of everybody being on the same page, you know, I think that really helps with the success of the band. Because if you've got people going into a band with different, you know, ideas of where they want to be and whether they want to be just a fun band or a band that's going to make it or a band that they're going to, you know, the lead singer and the guitar player are sold out, but the drummer has, you know, commitments and he can only do it this way and, you know, one or two nights of rehearsal and these guys want to do four nights of rehearsal.
That's a big thing, commitment.
That's, you know.
I think when you're in a band, it's like life. It changes every single day you're in the band. I mean, everything changes. The way you feel about it from day to day is always like,
it's a relationship.
Yeah, but don't you think it helps?
It's like
if
mania.
But don't you think it helps if everybody's on the relatively the same page?
It's the only way it works.
Yeah.
Here's the basic bottom line about bands, too. And when I use that example of like having the wrong guy out in front, I've heard, I don't know, probably five bands that I could name right now that had that exact problem where the band was good, but the lead guy just was not happening. And sometimes the lead guy was a good writer, but shouldn't have been singing his own stuff or rapping his own stuff in one case. But most bands suck.
Very well. Most of my sound two nights a week, so I can attest to that.
And most of the bands that suck don't know that they suck, but they do.
Also
they
true.
They really, really, really do.
That's awesome.
And it's just true. So, and it'd be, you know, the coolest app for the iPad would be if you could have, like, a thing that just tells you if your band sucks. Let me just finish by saying I think the best thing that can happen to you is that you find out sooner rather than later that your band sucks. Because you always find out eventually.
That's true. Yeah.
That is a uniform thing that happens to every band.
Awesome.
You find out if you suck eventually. I'd rather know in a month than a year, but it always ends up happening.
Well, people always make excuses. We didn't make it because of this or because of the weather or because that one record deal. No, you didn't make it because you suck.
Right.
One thing I noticed is when I was, you know, when I was playing in a band in Orange County and I came to a point where I knew I wasn't good enough to make it professionally, and that's when I went into backline. And I actually liked being a tech for bands because it gave me a lot of freedom to go, you know, come off one tour and going on another tour. But you look at the bands you work for, when they're done with their tour, they're sitting around for months at a time until they can figure out what they're going to do next. It's a real difficult lifestyle if you're not, you know, one of the Uber bands that makes it. And
even if you are, you've got to keep doing better. Like, they didn't buy this last album. I thought it was one of the best stuff I've ever written. And they don't like it because so-and-so came out. And then this event happened and my album came out and no one ever knew about it.
It's never an easy job. It's like you think you make it and you're done. But you make it. That just means that enough people know about you to make a living at it. And then you got to keep it going.
Okay, so we've been talking about bands, and we've been talking little nuggets about, you know, what bands, why they succeed and why they fail and things like that. Let me ask you guys, since everybody's played in a band, what do you think your responsibility is to the band if you are in a band right now? What would you say your responsibility is to that band?
I actually think it's really simple. Figure out – the first thing you need to know is why you're in the band. Know what your role is, and whatever that role is – make sure you're fulfilling that role so that if the thing falls apart, it's not because you weren't doing what you were supposed to be doing. Bands go through changes, and the roles may change. And you need to just understand why you're in the band because, like I say, most bands suck. Most bands fall apart. You need to understand why you're in the band. And if the band starts morphing into something that you didn't sign up for and you don't want to be involved in, that's when you need to pull the plug because by that point, any time that you spend after that point is wasted time because the band is going to disintegrate. So you need to understand what your role is. Do everything you can to fulfill what that assignment is. And if the environment becomes one where you can't do that anymore, you need to just get out. It doesn't do any good to waste a bunch of time in a band that you don't like the direction.
And a band is a business.
Right. Well, Scott,
you got to be a professional
about it.
Show up, you do your homework, you do the work you're supposed to do, you meet the expectations of everybody. It is a business, the same way you would do any other business that you would do, especially when you go professional, because then it truly is a business.
Ryan, what about you? What do you think?
That's exactly it. Whatever you signed up for is what you have to do. You have to show up. You have to be prepared. You can't be late. Just because you're playing music doesn't make it any different than anything else in your life you do. If you're the guy that shows up late, if you're the guy that isn't reliable, you're the first guy that gets kicked out of the band. You know, decide what you want to do in the band and pull your weight.
And commit. Just be
commit.
Professional.
Ken, what about you? You're in a band right now.
I would say practice at home, not just when the band gets together.
Yeah, do your homework.
Yeah, doing your homework, exactly. You can't just expect to come to a rehearsal and that's the only time you ever pick up the guitar or the drums or whatever instrument. You know, you have to, you know, nurture that instrument at home on your own time and bring that to the rehearsal.
Brandon, what about you?
I think you have to know where point B is. If you're at point A, what is point B? Is point B fun? Do you just want to have fun? Or is it make it or make a living doing this? And then it's like, okay, how do we figure out how to get from here to there? Because if you don't know where that point B is, you're just wandering around. So you have to figure out what that is, figure out what you need, what tool sets you need, what knowledge, what skill that you need to get from here to there.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to, you know what, obviously we could talk about this for hours and hours and hours, but we don't have that. We're going to be wrapping this up pretty soon. But before we go.
See, we know what our point B is. Our point B is getting the hell out of here.
Before we go, I don't want this to be all, you know, ragging on bands because.
Oh, then you came to the wrong place.
Because there's some really good reasons to be in a band and there's some really great things about a band. Before we go, I just want to go around the table and, you know, Rob, tell us a good thing about being in a band. Seriously.
Good thing about being in a band.
Because obviously you were in one.
Yeah. Well, I will say that I happen to be in a band with a lot of people from a lot of really different backgrounds. And I learned about just different parts of society and different cultures. They were all awesome musicians and singers in their own right. I got to learn a lot about alcoholism.
Kidding.
No, but you know, you learn a lot about people, and you'll become a better musician if you're playing with better musicians.
That's true.
By the way, if you feel like you're the best musician in your band, you're in the wrong band.
Absolutely.
It's like you also don't want to own the most expensive house on the block.
Right.
You don't want to be the strongest guy in your band. You want to be learning from other people.
That's a great point. Ken, what's the best thing about being in a band?
I think just hearing something that you have written come to life.
That's cool.
Maybe for me, just being with my friends that I've been with forever.
That's totally cool.
Making music.
Ryan, what's the best thing about being in a band?
I love making great music with great people, and just the feeling of having a unit come together.
That's
and
cool.
Being in a room, there's nothing like that experience. And anyone that hasn't played doesn't understand how that feeling is. I mean, it's a bond between people that you can only feel in that environment. And when it comes together with the right people, it can be something really special.
Scott, what's the best thing about being in a band?
You know, what I've always liked when I used to play is when you connect with the audience. And all of a sudden you're playing, the band's tight and everyone's really into it. And then you look outside and you've got the audience.
And they are too.
And they right there, and you could say and do anything.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And they're with you, you've got them, and for that hour, 2 hours, 5 minutes, whatever,
right,
they're yours.
That's cool.
And then all of a sudden that connection to me is it's better than drugs. It's the biggest high you can do.
That's awesome.
Truly is.
Brandon, yeah. What's the best
Scott
thing about
stole
been?
Mine, but
sorry.
Yeah, the just that feeling of being on stage, and you know, I mean, the live performance is not my favorite part. I prefer the studio, but you know, that there is such a thrill. You know, to if you play a great show, you've worked hard to put all this right. stuff together, and it goes off without a hitch. You feel awesome.
I think one of the best things about being in a band is along what you guys were talking about is I used to love when we were jamming, and it was just all coming together. I just like the glances that you would have at the other band members. And just you'd look over at the bass player was my brother. And when things were going good, it's like you just have this communication about like we're killing it tonight. This is awesome. You look over at the guitar player.
And you're connected.
Yeah. And you just that connection of a group when everybody's getting together. And I will say it's not only just with a band. Even when I was doing, backline teching with Stevie or Martin or whoever, it's like when everybody was gelling, you can connect to the monitor guy. I mean, everybody just knew it was just you're all on the same. It gives
what
me
happens
goosebumps.
Is you become a single entity.
Yeah.
It literally
gives me goosebumps. And that's – I miss that about the whole live performance. But I think that was the best thing because afterwards when all the crowd is gone and when you're just in the, you know, dressing room, you know, and you're just – it's just you guys there by yourselves and you look around and you're like, man, we killed it. It was awesome. And that's the best feeling in the world. Well, we're going to have to wrap it up. But, you know, if you're
– getting started.
We're going to have to wrap it up. But, you know, if you're in a band, just enjoy it. Have a good time and, you know, take some of these nuggets that everybody's kind of talked about.
Just know why you're there.
Being in a band can be the best and can also be the worst time of your life. So just go in it with your eyes open and practice. All right, Rob, you working on anything you can talk about? And
working on a few things. First of all, that citylovemusic.com
site. What was that?
www.citylovemusic.com is officially launched and on the air. And there was, I think, a first email went out last week. And we instantly got 100 songs submitted to the contest. So it's off and running, and we've got thousands of hits, and the promotion's going to start being really huge about it. So
nice.
The contest goes until the end of September. In case you missed the last podcast, it's the first web design, web infrastructure I've ever built, and it's a complicated one. It was kind of like writing YouTube from scratch. But it took about 5 months, and it is now live. So go to the site and try to crash it and send me an email. Actually, you don't have to do that because there are plenty of people already doing
Google.rob.
It's been working really well, and there's a lot of people uploading a lot of music and videos to it, and it's been really cool. So that's live and on the air right now. And then we're still in the process of producing a blues album. We're mixing a bunch of movie and TV stuff at my place, and there's just – whole lot of stuff going on. We're building our music library, which we've been working on for a while, but we're getting ready to start distributing that
Nice.
As well.
Ryan, are you, you know what? Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. It's a blast.
Tell us a little bit more about the home recording show. What are you guys up to out there? What's your next podcast?
We do a weekly show, and next week I have no idea what we're talking about. So I'll find out the day before we tape it.
Don't talk about bands, though.
No, I think we're going to skip bands.
But are you working on anything yourself?
My studio is ditchroadrecords.com, okay. So I'm always working there. I'm also going to be putting together a documentary that's kind of about bands, and it's kind of a reality twist on the whole band thing.
Great.
It's basically a concept where I'm going to take seven people, but five musicians that have never met each other, throw them all in a room, and make them produce an entire album, write, record, all in 7 days.
Wow.
And we'll see what happens. So a lot of blood. Full film crew. So pretty much everything we talked about bands will all happen in a pressure cooker.
That's awesome.
So that's coming up. Just see if I can find some funding for that. That should be easy.
Ken, how's your band?
My band's doing good. We've been doing some shows. We just did a hometown show, and it was really great. Turnout was amazing. All the old friends came out. I'm working on my studio, building it, and
Scott, what about you? Any good movies you're working on?
What am
right
I doing
now?
Anything
mixing?
Well, what I've been doing actually is I'm on hiatus for the last 2 weeks.
Nice.
I love it because
vacation or hiatus?
Well, I'm on a show, Charlie St. Cloud with Zac Efron, and it's actually very, very good. So we're we're on hiatus for a little bit. And though we're going to be doing a temp mix coming up very shortly. It's great. Very rarely, I've had a great, to be honest, 2 years of almost nonstop. So spending time with the family and also got a couple new plugins. And I'm kind of shedding again. I'm just going back in and just learning stuff, taking stuff that I already know and experimenting and just having free time to just get, speed up and just learn more gear.
Nice. That's great. Well, you're going to have to fill us in next time on some of the new plugins. Yeah. Brandon, what about you? I know you're still working on the super secret project.
I wonder if we can mention that.
I wouldn't.
I'm not going to. It comes out soon, though.
It comes out soon, and it's big.
And it's big. Is basically getting close to finish, which is awesome. If we finish the trailer, it will be great. Also, two new projects in. One of my childhood favorite TV shows, The A-Team, is now a movie.
Oh, no.
Nice.
Yep. Nice. I've been humming that all day. So just going to start working on that. Murdoch is played by the guy who played Wickus in District 9.
Yeah.
Who's awesome. Yeah. He's perfect for it. And we also – that movie's, it's silly and fun, but whatever. And then a new Angelina Jolie Russian spy thing called Salt.
Nice.
That we're working on.
And oddly enough, that one Mr. T's in. So weird.
That's great. That is
How
great.
How about you, Mike?
Right now, I'm in the middle of doing a bunch of tutorials for the API guys, and that's kind of fun. And actually, I want to – the next podcast, we are going to be joined by – the president and owner of API, Larry Dropa, as well as some other special guests. So
who has
great.
The best voice in the history of the podcast?
Oh, yeah. He could be a broadcaster.
The voice of God.
He can. So he's going to be with us. We're going to talk about API and some stuff. And just to give them a plug, I was over there, spent a couple days over at the factory and stuff. And those guys they just have such a great attitude. Everybody in the whole company and it's such a friendly place. And they're so committed to their product. And it's not an accident. Their product is as good as it is.
So they have the audio elves. Larry is
just
audio
everybody,
elves.
The guys that put them together and the service and everything. It was just they were all really nice and they're just all a certain seriousness about what they're doing and they just maintain. I guess the quality that's the best thing. Just the way to see how they test their gear and how they put their gear through, stress. And they just really care about every piece of gear that comes out.
And you know what? They make it look way too easy, too. When you're there, it's like, it's just such a well-oiled machine.
I mean, if you see some of the stuff they do, I'll give you a little secret. They have this giant oven that they put their modules in because – your modules are going to fail because when you first power it on or when they get hot and they want to make sure that they control all of those situations
pre-cooked.
Before. Yeah, so they literally they bake them and they turn them on and they stress them, and that's why when they come to you, you don't have to like break them in or anything. I mean, they are just they're going to sound awesome and they're going to sound great, and they just have it down to a science, you know. And they have racks where they're running, you know, signal through them for 24 hours, 48 hours, just making sure, just checking everything. You know, they really don't have to do a lot of this stuff. A lot of people just will assemble them and stick it straight from the assembly line right into the box, you know, because especially someone like them where they have such a low failure rate. But nope, every single one, they take the time to do it. And it's that's, you know, I just have to give a shout out to those guys because I was really impressed. But anyhow, going to be working on some of that stuff and, you know, mixing some commercials and things like that that I'll talk about later. But if you have any comments or questions for anybody on the Audio Nowcast, you can reach us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com. You can also check us out on our Facebook page. I do want to give a shout out. We got a really nice email from Matthias, and he was the one that corrected us on the voltage, the plus four, the minus 10.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And we'll have to wait till Bobby's here, and we'll talk about that and see were we just a little bit off on that one.
He was right.
But he was right. But he was really kind, and so I just wanted to give him a shout out. All right, guys.
Oh, one other thing I will say. Next week, the NAB show, there's supposed to be some interesting announcements and a lot of 3D stuff and interesting stuff. So we'll have to do a wrap up of that.
And we'll see what Avid has in audio, what new things. See, I can't even make a joke. I can't even spit it out yet.
Yeah, you gotta work on that.
Wait, is Avid backwards diva?
Yeah.
What?
Before we go, let's just Ryan, if they want to get in touch with you, what's a good place for them to reach
Ryan@homerecordingshow.com.
That's ryan@homerecordingshow.com. All right, gang. Well, for myself and all the guys, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Aphex and Westwave Audio. The Audio Nowcast is hosted by Mike Rodriguez with Rob Arbitier, Scott Gershon, Martin Page, Andrew Sheps, and Bobby Summerfield. The program is produced by April Mastropaolo and uses Aphex's 230 Master Channel Voice Processor. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.